from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's Big Ten Media Week with Isaac and Souk.
The Cinderella story is over, man.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Jump back to earlier parts of your favorite fan shows on the Odyssey app. The only way to rewind Portland's sports leader.
Big Ten Media Week on primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080.
You're talking for your helmet!
The Fan.
Welcome aboard.
Ahoy!
It is Captain Buck today, an SOB edition of Primetime. No ROP, so Ryan Buckley behind the mic, Jason Sakanik here next to me, and Will Ortner behind the glass. Fellas, I'd ask how we're doing, but Souk, I know you're playing hurt today a little bit.
Playing hurt, but as Dan Lanning says, being sick is a choice.
Yeah.
Unlike my cohort, who is not sick.
We're playing golf as a choice.
Playing golf as a choice, although can we place the odds that he's at Pebble Beach?
Yeah.
And this one was planned, mm-hmm. unlike his, you know, week-long COVID trek.
Right.
This was a planned thing. Can we place some odds on the fact that he comes back from Pebble Beach with some sort of Andromeda strain illness that's going to be out? Because he's supposed to be back on Tuesday. I'm putting the over-under right now on Thursday. There's no way he's here Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah, my first thought was, well, what is the percentage chance that he's back on Tuesday as expected? Like, last time we made the fatal flaw of saying, oh, it'll be 60 or 70%. Like, no.
Well, and remember, too, that in classic ROP form, he's flying back Tuesday. This is the other one that ROP loves to do. So he's playing golf. He'll play golf 3 days, which mm-hmm. means he's flying back Tuesday morning. So with all the airline stuff, just that alone, the airline thing
puts it in jeopardy.
Puts that thing at 50-50.
Yeah.
Then you throw in the fact that it's ROP. Then you throw in the fact of his immune system. I think we're looking at like a 20% chance he's here on Tuesday.
I was gonna go maybe 30. So yeah, I think we're on to something.
Maybe
there.
We'll set the line at 20-25%. But yeah, yesterday during the show, because like I said, ROP was gonna be gone at about 4 o'clock. I whispered in your ear, I said, hey, because we were gonna do the show together.
Right.
I said, hey, just heads up, dude. I'm like, I don't feel so good. So about midway through the show, like my throat started to get sore. And you know when it's coming. I got home last night, ate dinner, and by 8:15, it was one of those, like, I'm going to go pass out. No brushing the teeth, no washing the face, clothes pile right where the edge of the bed, and it was just boom. And I slept from by 8:15, 8:30, and I woke up this morning about 10. And I don't sleep very much. I'm about a 5-hour-a-day guy.
Okay.
And so for me to go on the 8.
Would you double it?
At least.
Yeah.
And so then I just kind of woke up in a haze. I was like, huh? Like my dog. Because my dog is a pretty regimented guy, too. Like, he wakes me up about 6:37.
Hey, lazy bones, let's go.
Yeah.
You got things to do.
So I woke up this morning to a 150-pound Akita basically standing on my chest.
Sure. Being
like, hey, old man. Chop, chop. What are we doing? So I went downstairs, fed him, and then I got my daughter. I was like, hey, you're walking him today. I laid back in bed till about noon, woke up, took a mass amounts of drugs and caffeine, and here I am, because as Dan Lanning says, Being sick, it's a choice. And I choose not to be sick.
It's funny. When I was in college, I actually also kind of subscribed to that. I had a guy that I lived with who was... He was always like, I think I'm getting sick. And he'd say that on like a Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, he would be sick by Friday and he wouldn't go out with us. And we're like, dude, like you think you're getting sick like all the time. I would feel it coming on and be like, no, I am not going to get sick. I have to party this weekend. That's what's happening right now. And you kind of just mentally power through it. And maybe it's not the best idea, but you're in college and you're in your 20s, so you do it.
Well, me and Rob have had this discussion in that we just... Like, I come from a different world in that, and Will probably grew up in this same sort of thing. Like, when you grow up in a really competitive environment, not being there is kind of a death sentence. It just is.
Yeah.
And when you're not there, someone else is.
Yep.
And so I just, for my entire life, it just has always been in the back of my head that if you can be there, you show up.
Otherwise, you get Wally pipped.
Yeah. And I think if you didn't grow up in that environment, you don't necessarily have that mentality. And believe me, I've tried to shake it over the years and I just don't have it. There is something I really struggle. And it, like, believe me, I've talked about this like in therapy. I just struggle with not doing stuff. I struggle with just laying there and being like, I don't feel good. Like the first time I got COVID. Well, the only time I got COVID.
That we know of.
Oh, yeah. There was one of those. I got a message from the BTJ this morning. It was like, hey, I know that you're not going to do this, but maybe you should take a test. And my response back to her, I won't share on air. But, yeah, it's good luck with that. But, like, I was sick the one day, and I woke up the next day, and I felt, you know, so-so. And it was, like, 100 degrees outside. It was one of those. It was, like, either last summer or 2 summers ago. It was really hot, and I was sitting around, and I was like, I feel okay. And so my response to it was, just go out, and I got on my bike, and I rode like 25 miles. It was like, I'll sweat it out.
My dad is that way. When he starts to feel sick or even is sick, he'll be like, if I work out, I'll just kill all the bad viruses.
Big,
like,
believer in that.
Right? Yeah.
Throw on the sweats, yes. Throw on the sweatshirt, sweat maybe even out. A garbage bag.
It's probably a terrible way to go about doing it, but
I can't. It feels like such an old man move. But I'd go outside. It kind of works.
And so today, I thought about doing that, but I kind of got up late, and so I just went outside and I stood outside in the sun for like 10 minutes. I went and like kind of like just stood outside in my yard and wandered around and
grounded yourself. That's what you did. Out here grounding. You're going the Tucker Carlson. You have your shirt off too, sun and everything.
All I had on was a pair of skivvies, and that was it. And the only reason those were on is because my daughter was in the house. Outside of that, I wandered the yard with my dog for like 10 minutes, and then you go take a hot shower, and you sit in the hot shower for a while, and you blow your nose, and then you get up and you go about your day. I am the world's worst person if you're looking for sympathy. If you're not feeling well or something hurts,
that's on you, take care of it.
Fatal flaw of mine. It's not a good trait. It's just... If you have something that is bothering you or it's painful or you're going through something, you don't feel well, I'm the last guy that you should come to and be like, I don't feel good. And every partner that I've ever had hates me for it, but it just, I struggle with it. There's a great meme that goes around. It's from The Boys. Do you watch The Boys?
Yeah. I'm not up to date with the most recent season, but I've seen the first two seasons.
Yeah, the... Soldier Boy, who's like their version of Captain America, if Captain America was a psychotic killer.
Yeah.
There's a great meme that goes on there, a little clip where he's talking to one of the guys, and he goes, you know what I do when I feel anxious and nervous? Nothing, because I'm not a... And that's... I've tried to beat it out of myself over the years, but I definitely have some of that. Like, hey, what do you do when you're not feeling well? Nothing, because I'm not a... Just get up and get going. So... About halfway through the show, if I start sounding like Kermit the Frog, I apologize. Or the caffeine runs out, but I got plenty of nasal spray. I'm good to go.
You won't have to do quite as much talking today because we do actually have a couple sports guests. We will talk to Joey Harrington as we always do on Fridays for a little story time. We'll find out about getting thorny in the Thorns Investment Group.
No, we got to talk about him flat out lying to us.
That's the other thing that has to be addressed.
He lied.
He lied. Well, he didn't lie to our faces. He lied to our ears.
Yes.
When directly asked.
Yeah, we asked him directly about the Generation O uniforms, and he said they had not been contacted. And then like 2 weeks later, he's doing videos. He's dropping videos for the new uniforms, which are fire, by the way.
They're really good.
Give him credit. I don't know if he had anything to do with the creation of the uniforms, but those things are slick.
And then additionally, at 3:30, even sooner than Joey, we have Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times, Mariners beat writer. They've been busy after we've been kind of dragging DePoto the last couple days, and yeah. He was saying, oh, other teams want to get good players too. It seems like he might have gotten a good bat and a good arm, so we'll talk to Divish about that.
And I'll say this, if you don't know, they got a Rosarena today from the Rays. And this is what I like. If that doesn't work out, I don't care.
You took a shot.
It's what I wanted from the Blazers for all those years with Dame. I hate that noodle arm. Well, I don't know. It's a risky move. Good. Again,
just floating in purgatory. Yeah.
Have some stones. Make a move. If it doesn't work out, because he's not having a great year. He's hitting like 211, which, by the way, fits in perfectly with the Mariners. But that's a former All-Star. And if it doesn't work out for you, so be it. At least you didn't sit on your thumbs and watch your lead evaporate. You went out and tried to do something. That's all I've ever asked from a front office, is have some guts, and occasionally, not all the time, occasionally, go full send.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sit there year after year after year and have the same problem and not do anything about it. It drives me crazy.
We'll get more sportsy in just a second, but there are many people here who agree with both of you about working out being the best way to get better or to get through being sick. One person on the Vancouver Ford text line saying the best thing to do when sick is go to work. I work outdoors in the vineyards, and after getting some fresh air and breaking a sweat, I always feel at least a little bit better.
Yeah,
then that's kind of what we're all talking about.
And there are days where it does, you know, look, we've all been sick where you ain't getting out of bed. I mean, I certainly have those.
Sure. Well, there are times where you can't.
Yeah.
But
when you can, get up. And when you can't, do the other satanic thing, which is mix as many drugs as possible and just pass out for like 36 hours. Or don't do that. But if you do, might I recommend codeine and NyQuil in large quantities and just zonk out. I call that the hibernation theory. But again, don't do it. But you can just pass out for like a day and a half, and you wake up and like your fingernails have grown and you've grown like a beard, and then you're like, oh, I'm up. It's Hibernol.
I'm a big believer in vitamin R personally. That always helps kill all the virus, right? That's what alcohol is for.
But that's when you got to go to an Irish whiskey. I mean, look, it's one thing if you have a mild cold and you're going vitamin R, but if you're really sick, there's only one way to do that, and you got to switch to brown.
You going with the hottie toddy?
There you go. Mm-hmm. You just got to switch to that. Hey, I can't sleep. I'm all stuffy. I got some Tullamore Dew that'll take care of that.
So we had a family friend that told my mom once that one of the best things for a sore throat is a little bit of cherry brandy right before you go to bed. It's just like the way that it kind of soothes it and coats it. It's somewhere between an alcohol and a cough syrup almost.
Then you like rub the. You ever do that when you were a kid? Like the rub the whiskey on kids' gums.
I've heard of that. I've not tried. That
or but, rubbing something else on your gums. I don't know. So
my mom got sick and had a sore throat, and she's like, you know what, maybe I'll just go to the store and grab some cherry brandy. So she goes to the store, and that's all she needed. In California, you can just get that at the grocery store. And she ran into my soccer coach with only cherry brandy in her cart at 11:30 in the afternoon.
Dude, that is.
And he's like, oh, what's going on? She's like, well, I'm feeling a little bit sick. And he looks down at the brandy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's always interesting when you run into someone. This was many, many, many moon ago when I was first just raising the kids on my own, when it was just me. I would do a lot of late night grocery shopping. It was just the easiest time of the day. I'd put the kids to bed, and then I would go out and I would go grocery shopping. So I'd be at like Winco or at Safeway at 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran into someone that I knew who should not should not have been in the grocery store buying what they were buying, and it was amazing. The look on the face of someone that is buying certain items.
Yeah, I got a good idea.
In the middle of the night, and I'm not certain that his wife was aware of said items, because the look on his face when I was like, hey, those aren't items that you're buying for your wife. No.
Uh-huh.
Those are items that are being purchased for something else. And I just remember looking at him just having the biggest S-eating grin. I'm like, huh? Huh?
What are you up to?
What are you up to? You think you're running into me in the middle of the night at Winco, were you? Ah? And just, it was fantastic.
The new one that I hate as a teacher is when I'm buying alcohol.
Yeah.
And then
you see a
Mr. Ortner.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Half rack of Bush Light.
The first time you run into a teacher or a principal,
it's awkward.
When they're in like civilian clothing.
Like in the wild. Yeah.
It's really, really weird. Like you're like, oh my gosh. Just like shatters your whole illusion of it. I remember seeing Mr. Perry out at a bar when I was like 21 and being like, oh my God. And he was out there like, and he was out there trying to get some too. It was very, I didn't know what to, I was just, the whole thing threw me off.
Look, it's a real tough look when a kindergartner runs up and says, Mr. Ordner. And the parents look over and I've got my Hooters hat on and I've got a shirt that says Coors Rodeo on it. It's not my favorite look.
Yeah.
The Coors Rodeo thing, that's making, that's the whole thing. When I was down at...
Wait, what is, I don't know what this is.
It's a t-shirt brand.
Yeah, it's like a t-shirt brand. Oh. It's like Coors, but it's Coors Rodeo. When I was at the fair...
Oh, so it's like Coors is just making like, kind of like, I don't know, they vintage do country stuff or something?
They do Modelos though, too.
Yeah.
It's okay.
When you go to, when you're at the Denver airport, there is an entire Coors store.
Cowboy cosplay? Cowboy beer cosplay?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like... And as someone who's been drinking the banquet now for 20 plus years,
banquet man,
and I do enjoy, I do have a couple old Coors shirts. It's weird now because it's now just become like its own brand. So when you go to the Denver airport, you can, there's an entire store that is just Coors merchandise. And then there's like Coors Rodeo. When I was at the Farewell Festival down in Redmond this last weekend, I'm telling you, dude, Coors stuff everywhere. And I'm not certain that anyone's drinking Coors. They're just wearing the Coors rodeos. Like they didn't have banquet anywhere for sale at the rodeo or at the festival, but everywhere you looked, there were Coors. It's like now Motorhead shirts. Like you see the motor, like Lemmy, who was the lead singer of Motorhead. Sure. He always said, if I had a dollar, or what did he say? Like if everyone that had a Motorhead shirt just spent a dollar on any of our albums, I'd be a very, very rich man.
It's cooler to have a Motorhead shirt than it is to listen to Motorhead.
Yeah, you'll run into someone wearing a Motorhead shirt, which is the coolest rock logo of all time. You'll be like, yeah, Ace of Spades. And someone will be like, what? Like, huh? Like, rope. And like, yeah, they just have no idea. You're like, oh, it's a cool shirt. That's kind of where the Coors Rodeo stuff is coming.
I got three of them.
This from the Vancouver 4 text line. If you're still at Freddy's, would you be able to pick up the veggie powder? Never mind, that was supposed to go to the wife. That's on the Vancouver Ford text line. But also, have we considered the possibility that Ortner might be poisoning you?
No.
No. Okay. No. Rop, I mean, I'm here. Now,
no, you're here, but you're a little under. Like, is he trying to Wally Pip you?
It's possible. Like at the gym, he's giving me like some sort of weird, like, hey, you want a spot? And then he's slipping me something.
You've never spotted me.
No,
I'm not allowing you to spot me. No. I think that there would be some shenanigans afoot.
It's probably for the best.
Right. I think it's better if we just work out on separate sides.
Yeah. Plus, at this point in my life, if I'm doing something that requires a spot, I'm doing something extremely wrong.
Well, right. Isn't that how you blew out your pec, kind of?
Yeah, that's a young man's game.
We had that conversation the other day.
Exactly. There is nothing anymore that I am going to do that it's going to require a spot. I actually like this one, too. Someone all the time in the gym be like, hey, how much do you do? No idea. Because I'm not finding out. 46 years old. Those days are long, long gone. Long, long gone.
We have other methods for getting sick coming out on the Vancouver 4 text line, including chewing, or for curing being sick. Chewing a raw clove of garlic.
Oh, that's right out.
Additionally, this person says nothing works better for them than edibles. So there's an option.
Oh, don't worry. I'm on a strict drug regimen. Don't worry about that. I got you covered. We're all good there.
Well, we do have to soldier on because I want to sports a little bit before we get to our first sports guest. That's Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times going to tell us about what the Seattle Mariners have been up to as we get closer to the deadline. They've been very busy today. A couple other things in today's show, as I mentioned, Joey Harrington and why he lied to us, Dan Lanning, ice cream cones, and the art of war. Also, an Iraq war reference and notable extortion attempt that sounds like in the news. It's actually Washington Huskies in the NFL. I will explain that later.
Right.
And but for where we start next, front offices, what is the most important thing they can do to help your sports franchise? That's coming up next on an SOB edition of Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Big Ten Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime, an SOB edition. Sue Ortner and Buckley in today. Isaac out today and Monday. We're banking on maybe Tuesday as well, but we'll see about that. Want to get to our poll question. We'll start with yesterday's poll question, where we asked you, with Oregon's road games of Oregon State, UCLA, Purdue, Michigan, and Wisconsin, what will be the Ducks' road record? We gave you the options 5-0, 4-1, 3-2, or 2-3 and worse. 4-1, the majority winner at 46%. What did you say to that one?
That's what I added, 4-1. I think they'll either stub their toe at Michigan or Wisconsin. It's really hard to go undefeated, no matter how good you are.
And those are two really good programs who should be playing pretty well at home, even if they're, you know, Michigan maybe taking a step back from their team last year, et cetera. I think Michigan's still got a lot of talent,
and they're a physical team. It's like Michigan all of a sudden is going to forget how to play physical football. So, yeah, give me 4-1.
And so that'll move over now. Or now we'll move over to today's poll question, and we actually, after kind of clamoring for it, got some exciting Mariners news.
Yeah.
Last night, reports coming out that the Mariners were in conversations and essentially coming to terms on acquiring Randy Arozarena from the Tampa Bay Rays. Big power hitter. They need a bat more than we've been able to even express. They have paltry averages, not many home runs on that roster. This fills an immediate need, especially with J-Rod on the IL. And they only gave up two prospects and a player to be named later. So not giving up any major league talent to get that. And then this afternoon, just before we got to the show, they acquire Yimi Garcia, who Jeff Passan was calling the best right-hander available on the trade market.
Yeah.
They're actually making some moves, and I thought what looked like maybe now a rudderless ship, they might just try to play out the string and see if they got lucky enough to enter the tournament. This appears that they're going for it now.
Love it. I think if you're a Mariner fan, you're super stoked. And the two prospects you gave up in the Arozarena deal, it was like 12th and 20th in your
organization.
In your organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a top 10 guy. So I love this. You know, I think that you just look around and you know, it's wide open. I don't think there's any team right now that you just look at and say that is an absolutely terrifying roster. I mean, the Orioles have had their struggles. The Yankees have had their struggles. I mean, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They're really good. But I don't think there's like a super team out there. And you look at the Mariners and as good as their pitching staff is.
You just got a little bit better there.
Yeah, you got a little bit better there and you got a bat. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't know no matter what you were going to do if you have an offense that's really going to carry you. But you know, to say that there's nothing you can do, I will just never accept that. So I think if you're a Mariner fan today, regardless of how this works out, Considering what you did last trade deadline, getting rid of Seawald, I think this is what you've wanted, and you've got to be excited about it, regardless of how it turns out.
The trade deadline is on Tuesday, and so we'll see if there are any moves to follow. One of the things we'll ask Ryan Divish, but one of the things I wanted to ask you and ask the listeners, you can find us on X at 1080 The Fan. All we ask is that you vote and vote hard, is which aspect of front office management is the most important in pro sports franchises? And there may be a little bit of overlap here, but the categories I gave are, or the choices I gave are, drafting and talent evaluation, signings and contracts, trades, and hiring a coach / vision.
I think they all come into play.
All matter.
There's nothing more important than front office in sports. There just isn't. If you don't have a good front office, you just are not going to win, plain and simple, because the front office makes every decision, including hiring a coach, including an overall vision. I mean, you can have kind of a some sketchy ownership, but if you have a good GM, it can negate some of that. If you draft the right guys, see like in Cincinnati with like Joe Burrow and company, that's an organization that really does not have good ownership, but they've done a good job of masking things. But ultimately it does come down to a handful of those decisions from the front. And to me, the most important thing is drafting an evaluation. I mean, unless you're the Yankees and the Dodgers and you can outspend everyone, and in the rest of the sports you can't because there's a salary cap. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you fall ass backwards into someone and, that guy changes your franchise. See like LeBron in Cleveland. You didn't have to have any scouting to do that.
It's like, no, you just had to end up with the right pick the right year.
Exactly, right? You fell ass backwards into it. But for the most part, in sports, if you draft and you evaluate talent and develop talent, that's going to lead you 80% of the way, because it's by far the way the vast majority of championship teams are built. Even in baseball, which is the one really uneven playing field, mm-hmm. The best dynasty we've had over the last 30 years is what? The New York Yankees.
Yeah.
And for all of the Yankees' ability to buy people, their unlimited pocketbooks, when you look at the core of those, what they win, five championships, mm-hmm. Jeter, Williams, Posada, Mo Rivera, those
Tino
guys,
Martinez,
most of those guys were drafted. Most of the guys came within their system, and then they were able to supplement it. The Golden State Warriors drafted Clay, drafted Draymond,
drafted Steph,
and then were able to supplement that with Kevin Durant and Livingston and David West and some of those other guys.
Yeah.
But at the core of it, it was drafting. The Spurs, when they went on theirs, Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, drafted. And by the way, some of those guys, not particularly high.
Right.
So drafting and talent evaluation, I don't care who you are and what sport, that is the number one thing. If you tell me that I have a great front office that knows how to draft and knows how to evaluate talent, and I will take that over anything all day. I will take that over an unlimited checkbook.
I would too. I think talent evaluation in, I don't know that it necessarily folds in, but player development.
Yeah.
Knowing how to make better the assets that you have, in addition to identifying the good assets. That to me would also be the name.
And some of that too is like when part of developing talent is finding guys that have upside. It's like we talk about this a lot in the NFL. It's not always the guys that are great in college. I'll take myself for example. I was a really good college player.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the three or four best in my position, depending on, your stupid All-American lists. I was one of the three or four best centers in college football. I had no room to grow. That was as good as I was ever going to be.
Hit your peak.
My ceiling. Body wasn't very good, breaking down. There wasn't much upside. I wasn't going to become a better athlete. I wasn't getting any stronger. That's just who
I was. You had the game parts of it figured out. You weren't going to necessarily improve there.
No, that's just what I was. And so looking at me and saying, hey, that kid was a really good college player versus like maybe someone that started 1 year at, like Northwestern or something. And looking at that and being like, well, that kid's really raw and he needs to put on 20 pounds. And he did a lot of stuff that was kind of in college. But being able to look at the difference between me and that kid and saying that in 3 years with 20 pounds and some seasoning, dude, that kid can be the best center in the NFL. Whereas this dude is
we gonna, can't squeeze any more juice out of
there's that. Nothing else. Yeah. He's just going to go and he is what he is. That's the difference. And so when you say talent evaluation, it's not just about saying, oh, this guy was the better college player. It's finding out who can grow and develop into something else. And that is a real eye. and a real skill. And the ones that have it in spades are the ones that go on to be really, really good GMs and really good scouts.
I know that Jerry DePoto has gotten more flack recently than he has praise, but part of the reason the Mariners got competitive over the last couple seasons is because of some of that talent evaluation he's been able to do and trying to build that franchise back up from being a loser into being a middling team, into being a competitive team. And coming up next, we will talk with Ryan Divish, who covers the Mariners for the Seattle Times. He's going to chat with us about the Randy Arozarena trade that started last night, as well as the Yimi Garcia trade that came down this afternoon. That's coming up next, but first, Will has SportsCenter.
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime. The Mariners getting busy approaching Tuesday's trade deadline. We needed to dive in on what we thought was going to be one deal going into the show today. Now two different deals. And to do that, we are joined by Ryan Divish, who covers the Mariners for the Seattle Times. You can follow him at Ryan Divish on X. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
Well, I know that you're not with the team right now, but you've been following this story, obviously. And the first thing that you mentioned last night after the news broke was that the Mariners had to give up a couple decent prospects to make this deal. Obviously, they needed some more thump in the lineup with Arozarena, but what were your first reactions to the trade when you saw what they were getting and what they were giving up?
Well, I was surprised that they didn't have to give up one of their top 10, you know, prospects, you know, according to the prospect rankings. I mean, you could have, there are some scouts that would argue that Aiden Smith, the outfielder, is probably a top 10 in their organization just based on potential and everything else. But no, I mean, you kind of knew that they had to do something with Julio Rodriguez out for a couple weeks with an ankle sprain, JP Crawford out for over a month with a broken pinky finger, and really just the offense scuffling as much as it has been. Like, they just couldn't sit on their hands this trade deadline and hope that a bunch of underperforming hitters were somehow just going to figure it out after 100 and some games. You know, it just wasn't happening. So they had to go and do something. And so the Rays and Mariners, I think, have made about 13 trades under Jerry DePoto. So, like, they're familiar with each other's organizations pretty well. And I mean, like, we all kind of thought that maybe it would be Isaac Paredes or even Yandy Diaz, but the Mariners felt like they needed another outfielder with Julio down, and they wanted to go that route. So they went and got Randy Arozarena. Aiden Smith, the young outfielder, he kind of reminds me of the, you know, Josh Lowe and Brandon Lau, the two guys that are already on the Rays, left-handed with some speed, got a little bit more pop than you would think. I mean, he's only 19 years old or 18 or 19 years old. He was a high school draft pick last year, but he's a good player. He's a good prospect. And, you know, the Rays do have a way of developing other people's prospects into something. So, and even Brody Hopkins, the pitcher, is one of the best athletes overall in the entire organization. Like, there are some scouts that have said that he runs a faster 60 time than Julio Rodriguez. So as a pitcher, he was a two-way player in college, and they converted him full-time pitching. And they really believe that this was one of those guys that with their pitching lab and stuff, they could have really built into something. So they gave up real prospects to get Arozarena, but it speaks to how much they need help offensively.
How much was this, you know, internally knowing that they had to go for it, and how much of this was outside pressure? Because I feel like every time DePoto opens his mouth, like, the collective fan base just rolls their eyes and groans, begging him to do something. So how much of this is internal versus external pressure, you think?
I think there's some internal pressure too, but I mean, like, you'll notice that Jerry hasn't been very public this year, you know, after the disastrous postseason press conference and everything else that went wrong. He isn't out there very much anymore, but, you know, talking with Scott Servais and even general manager Justin Hollander and Jerry DePoto, like, they knew they needed to do something. You can't waste what they've got from these starting pitchers this year. You just can't. I mean, like, it's, they have the best starting rotation in the American League. You know, they've used the fewest starting pitchers, and they've thrown the most innings. I mean, like, you've got guys like Gilbert and Kirby and Luis Castillo and then Bryce Miller and then Brian Wu now. Like, this is a good rotation as you're going to have. Can't waste it, because what they've been, other with the exception of Brian Wu, is they've been unbelievably healthy. You don't know that that's going to happen next year or the year after that, so you better take advantage of it now. And you look, too, like, the division is flawed. I mean, like, you know, the Mariners can't hit. That's well known. But, like, the Astros' starting rotation is a mess. The Rangers have been really banged up. And, like, it's kind of there for the taking. Like, you can win the division. You've already put yourself in this position. Despite having the worst offense in all of baseball, you're one game out of the division lead, and you've been in the division lead for most of May, June, and July. Like, you're there. You're at the finish line. You just got to push. So that's why they went and got these guys, and that's why I think they'll continue to add more.
What is this, just the general feel? Because, you know, when you have a 10-game lead, I know it's early in the season, but when you have a 10-game lead, you know, that's usually a pretty good indicator you're just fine. And to look up and in a very short period of time to have that evaporate, just kind of the feeling around this team right now with, I mean, I'm not saying historic collapse, but it's up there.
No, it's historic. It's the fastest 10-game lead blown since the 1995 Angels.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the fastest 10-game lead blown. Ooh, and that was the Mariners who helped them blow that. So, like, no, it is historic. And, you know, there was panic and there was, like, frustration. And you could see guys, you know, wondering what the heck is going on. And meanwhile, they're offering up all this false bravado, like that they're fine and it doesn't matter. But you know, you could just see it and how they were playing. Yeah, it bothered them. They were getting scared. Like, we're gonna blow this lead. What if you did all this work to get there and you're gonna blow it within I think they blew it in 24 games, 33 days and 24 games. They blew a 10-game lead. Ooh. So and give the Astros credit. They played. I think they went over a 26 game span. They went 20-6.
Yeah, they got really hot.
Yeah, like that's 7-something baseball. Like, that just doesn't happen all the time, you know. And you know, it's self-corrected a little bit, but now you're in this position that they were in probably last year at this time too, where like everybody's within a game or two of each other, and then they're just gonna duke it out. I mean, I fully expect at some point the Rangers will take the lead in the division. I expect the Mariners will lead again in the division, and Houston will. Like, they're gonna go back and forth because if you recall last year, you know, the Rangers got out to a 9.5 game lead early, and they kind of kept it about 5 or 6. And then, you know, their bullpen got exposed for what they were, and then it wilted, and the Mariners took the lead for a while, then the Astros, and they all went down to the last day or the second to the last day of the season. I expect that to happen again because I think all three teams are flawed. I don't think any one is significantly better than the other. Like, the Astros have a great offense. They don't really pitch, but they have three really good relievers. The Rangers have some offense when they're healthy. They have terrible bullpen and a couple of pitchers that are coming back. And then the Mariners have that starting staff, an improved bullpen, and no offense. So, like, it's just kind of who can withstand and kind of tread water until they get hot enough to take control.
Well, the second piece that came into focus today was not just the Arozarena deal, but now they also this afternoon acquired Yimi Garcia, a right-handed pitcher. You speaking about how great the staff is already. How does he fit into it? Is he somewhat? Where is he going? What is his role going to be? Or is he a piece that they could flip for more hitting? Like, are they done, or is this? Do you expect them to commit to him?
No, Garcia is like a middle. He's like a leverage relief type that they need for the seventh or eighth inning. I mean, they just have really missed Matt Brash, who had season-ending Tommy John, never pitched for them. And then Gregory Santos, another leverage reliever that they went out and got. He's been hurt most of the year, and he tweaked his knee the other day. It sounds like he'll be okay. But, like, they just need something in the back end of their bullpen to help out Andrés Muñoz, who's pretty much been their only consistent reliever all year. That's been the one thing, too. Like, in years past, they've found guys or they've went out and got guys and created guys like Paul Sewald, you know, picked him up off the scrap heap and turned him into a really good reliever. They haven't been able to do that this year with some of their pickups, you know, and putting Trent Thornton in these leverage situations just wasn't working. And Ryan Stanek's been inconsistent of late. So they went out and got Yimi Garcia because they think he can get some swing and miss. He's versatile enough to pitch an inning plus, and he can close if you need him to. Obviously they don't, but like they needed another leverage arm. I wouldn't be surprised if they had another reliever. Like if you believe you're close and you don't score a lot of runs anyways, maybe the best thing to do is continue to have bullpen pieces so when you play those close games, you have guys that can get strikeouts. But, I mean, I think, you know, they're not going to use Garcia to get another piece, but they're going to try and trade because they still have all their top prospects available to trade if they wanted to. So they can go after the aircraft carrier. They made an offer. I know they've made real efforts to try and see what they have to give up to get Vlad Guerrero, and they have some pieces. It's whether Toronto wants to do it or not. I don't know about Luis Robert per se. You know, I'm sure that I know they've inquired about him. Those are the two main guys, but I think they'll add peripheral pieces if they don't. Like if those guys aren't available, you know, they may add another platoon bat that can play third base or first base. You know, they do have a hole at first base since they've gotten rid of Ty France and they're playing a rookie there. So there are options, and they need to add another bat, you know, maybe two. If they're peripheral bats, maybe two. But there are some pieces out there that maybe not as sexy as Vlad Guerrero, but that could help them, because right now they need anything that, you know, gets them to be able to get the runs per game up to, you know, if they can get to 4.5 runs per game, that covers up a lot of problems. They're at 3.5 runs per game. That's just not a good place to be.
Where does Rosarena fit into the lineup?
Yeah, about third or fourth, I guess, right now. You can kind of sandwich him in between, you know, Jorge Polanco and Cal Raleigh is my guess. They're both switch hitters, so you don't run in that split situation or anything like that. They'll play him in left field. You know, they know he's not a great defensive outfielder, but they just need somebody to bring some presence. So, you know, I would say three or four is probably where he'll bat.
Talking to Ryan Divish on the Mariners beat. Just one more for you, Ryan, before we get you out of here. I know you also referenced on your X timeline the contract for Randy Rosarena. Obviously, they need his help this year, but what does he have left on his contract moving forward, and what is that going to ultimately cost the Mariners?
So he's got two more years of arbitration eligibility after this year, and he made $8 million this year. So he'll likely make, even with his down year and his overall down numbers, he still plays a lot, you know, and the quantity matters. So my guess is he'll at least get a $4 million bump onto that. So that's $12 million for next year. And even if it goes up to $16 million for the year after that, that's a sizable amount of money. But again, you're probably paying, I mean, they paid, you know, Mitch Garver was 2 years, $24 million on the free agent market this year. So it could be a bargain if Randy hits, you know. And that's one thing like about Rosarena is he hits good pitching and he performs in the playoffs. So I think they feel like bringing this guy with, he's, you know, he doesn't lack for confidence. Anybody who's watched him. And maybe he brings some presence. And I think, you know what, you got to invest. You got to invest money to, you know, get to where you want, make the big money of being in the World Series. So I think, you know, they understand that there's some dollars are at risk. And I guess if it totally tanks or whatever, then maybe they try and move him in the offseason to a team.
Fair enough. Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. He's on the Mariners beat. You can check him out on X at Ryan Divish. Appreciate you hopping on with us and all the insights.
No problem. Take it easy, guys.
Hey, and I know people like dragging the fact that old Randy there is hitting 211, you know, but again, he would be second in the team in RBI, second in the team in home runs behind Cal Raleigh.
He brings the pop that you need, and he's capable of hitting better than that.
Yes, he's having a little bit off here. He runs the bases a little bit, and he's not a great defender, but he's got a big arm. So, look, it's no Vlad Guerrero. God, that would be pie in the sky, but...
And it sounds like they may still be trying to make that happen. He mentioned they still have some of their best chips to be able to trade with, so...
Look, if you're a Mariner fan and you're upset with this one, then I don't know what to tell you.
The bottom line is you're taking a swing, which is what we want.
And you didn't give up a lot to go get it.
No.
So...
Really nicely done by Jerry DePoto, it seems, at least for now. We'll find out. The proof will be in the pudding when playoff time comes around. But I think as a fan base that's been frustrated by the lack of moves, this is as much as you can hope for. Two moves in 24 hours and maybe more coming before we get to Tuesday. Coming up next, going to shift gears to the NFL. Tua got paid and a couple Huskies with some interesting stories at their respective training camps. It's coming up next on Primetime on 1080 The Fan. Get up!
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime. Just finished up with Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times on the Mariners beat. But we got to move over to a little bit of NFL now because another quarterback got paid today, Sue.
Yep.
And
is it such a thing as getting a deal when you have to give someone $53 million?
So that's kind of what I wanted to ask you because, yes, Tua Tagovailoa just got a ton of money. He just made a bag. But compared to what some of his peers and colleagues are getting, doesn't seem that crazy. So where do we sit on this thing?
I mean, you sit on it where you knew he was going to get paid. I mean, I think he's what, the fourth? Is it the fourth highest now. Is it the third? So it's Burrow's one.
I think Burrow and Lawrence are tied at 1-2 at 55, and then he's at 53.1 average annual salary.
So he's a it's a scooch up, and then Herbert I think comes in there. So it's all new money. If you thought that Tua was going to sign for a sweetheart of a deal, you're fooling yourself.
No.
And this is the problem that we have with quarterbacks. It's not about being the best. It's about being next. And, you know, when Tua was healthy, Tua put up MVP numbers last year. So he said he wasn't going to play 11 on 11. He was only doing 7 on 7 stuff in camp. And, you know, none of this should shock you. Is Tua worth $53 million? No, he's not. Very few people that are worth $53 million.
But that's what a starting quarterback on a good team makes now.
Yes. And this is my biggest problem that I have right now with the NFL is they have to figure this out. Because as the salary cap keeps climbing and the quarterback number keeps climbing, there's just very few guys that can they can take this sort of the cap and then have you put a really good team around them. And, you know, Miami wasn't winning anything big when Tua was making rookie money. And it's going to become that much harder when he's making this. And so this is the juxtaposition of the NFL now, where you pay your quarterback an S ton of money and the rest of the roster gets worse. And when you're not good enough to win on a rookie deal, when you're able to put a great team around you, it's just harder and harder when you do get paid. But I don't fault any quarterback for wanting $53 million, because if someone wanted to give me $53 million and everyone else was getting it, well, why would I take less?
And I know you're saying that he's not giving them a deal, but the total value of the contract is $212.4 million. The guaranteed money is $167 million.
Yeah.
That's eighth among NFL quarterbacks. So he's not getting the most or even close to the most guaranteed money. On annual value, yeah, he's right up there with the very best, but he's not getting the most guaranteed money. And he's a guy where we've seen something can happen to him, maybe more easily than others. So I think that I don't know that he's conceding something with that. But the other thing that stood out to me is that I read that Miami is now the only team in the NFL with three offensive skill players making at least $70 million in guaranteed money. They've got Tyreek Hill, who's making 72, Jalen Waddle is making 71, and now, of course, you've got Tua, who's making 53. That's the third highest for any skill set in the NFL players.
They're spending a bunch of money. And, you know, the truth of the matter is when you're paying Waddle, you're paying Hill, and you're paying Tua, you can't pay everybody. And so you're going to be cheap at other positions. So the question becomes, is Miami really a complete team? Or are they just going to go out there and say, hey, we're going to outscore everybody? And I'll tell you what, if you're paying those three guys, you better have cheap O-linemen and cheap defenders that are young and that can ball out. Otherwise, you know, get ready for shootouts and then going on the road in the playoffs and having happen what happened last year in Kansas City.
Well, and I think what they're basing this off of is like McDaniel has shown that he can take running backs off the scrap heap and turn them into big time performers. I mean,
nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
10 Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime. The Mariners getting busy approaching Tuesday's trade deadline. We needed to dive in on what we thought was going to be one deal going into the show today. Now two different deals. And to do that, we are joined by Ryan Divish, who covers the Mariners for the Seattle Times. You can follow him at Ryan Divish on X. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Well, I know that I know you're not with the team right now, but you've been following this story, obviously. And the first thing that you mentioned last night after the news broke was that the Mariners had to give up a couple decent prospects to make this deal. Obviously, they needed some more thump in the lineup with Arozarena, but what were your first reactions to the trade when you saw what they were getting and what they were giving up?
Well, I was surprised that they didn't have to give up one of their top 10, you know, prospects, you know, according to the prospect rankings. I mean, you could have, there are some scouts that would argue that Aiden Smith, the outfielder, is probably a top 10 in their organization just based on potential and everything else. But you kind of knew that they had to do something with Julio Rodriguez out for a couple weeks with an ankle sprain, J.P. Crawford out for over a month with a broken pinky finger, and really just the offense scuffling as much as it has been. Like, they just couldn't sit on their hands this trade deadline and hope that a bunch of underperforming hitters were somehow just going to figure it out after 100 and some games. You know, it just wasn't happening. So they had to go and do something. And so the Rays and Mariners, I think, have made about 13 trades under Jerry DePoto. So, like, they're familiar with each other's organizations pretty well. And I mean, like, we all kind of thought that maybe it would be Isaac Paredes or even Yandy Diaz, but the Mariners felt like they needed another outfielder with Julio down, and they wanted to go that route. So they went and got Randy Arozarena. Aiden Smith, the young outfielder, he kind of reminds me of Josh Lowe and Brandon Lau, the two guys that are already on the Rays, left-handed with some speed, got a little bit more pop than you would think. I mean, he's only 19 years old or 18 or 19 years old. He was a high school draft pick last year, but he's a good player. He's a good prospect. And, you know, the Rays do have a way of developing other people's prospects into something. So, and even Brody Hopkins, the pitcher, is one of the best athletes overall in the entire organization. Like, there are some scouts that have said that he runs a faster 60 time than Julio Rodriguez. So as a pitcher, he was a two-way player in college, and they converted him full-time pitching. And they really believe that this was one of those guys that with their pitching lab and stuff, they could have really built into something. So they gave up real prospects to get Arozarena, but it speaks to how much they need help offensively.
How much was this, you know, internally knowing that they had to go for it, and how much of this was outside pressure? Because I feel like every time DePoto opens his mouth, like, the collective fan base just rolls their eyes and groans, begging him to do something. So how much of this is internal versus external pressure, you think?
I think there's some internal pressure, too. But, I mean, like, you'll notice that Jerry hasn't been very public this year, you know, after the disastrous postseason press conference and everything else that went wrong. He isn't out there very much anymore, but, you know, talking with Scott Servais, even general manager Justin Hollander and Jerry DePoto, like, they knew they needed to do something. You can't waste what they've got from these starting pitchers this year. You just can't. I mean, like, they have the best starting rotation in the American League. You know, they they've used the fewest starting pitchers and they've thrown the most innings. I mean, like, you've got guys like Gilbert and Kirby and Luis Castillo and then Bryce Miller and then Brian Wu now. Like, this is a good rotation as you're going to have. Can't waste it, because what they've been, other with the exception of Brian Wu, is they've been unbelievably healthy. You don't know that that's going to happen next year or the year after that, so you better take advantage of it now. And you look, too, like, the division is flawed. I mean, like, you know, the Mariners can't hit. That's well known. But, like, the Astros' starting rotation is a mess. The Rangers have been really banged up. And, like, it's kind of there for the taking. Like, you can win the division. You've already put yourself in this position. Despite having the worst offense in all of baseball, you're one game out of the division lead, and you've been in the division lead for most of May, June, and July. Like, you're there. You're at the finish line. You just got to push. So that's why they went and got these guys, and that's why I think they'll continue to add more.
What is this, just the general feel? Because, you know, when you have a 10-game lead, I know it's early in the season, but when you have a 10-game lead, you know, that's usually a pretty good indicator you're just fine. And to look up and in a very short period of time to have that evaporate, just kind of the feeling around this team right now with, I mean, I'm not saying historic collapse, but it's up there.
No, it's historic. It's the fastest. It's the fastest 10-game lead blown since the 1995 Angels.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the fastest 10-game lead blown. Ooh, and that was the Mariners who helped them blow that. So, like, no, it is historic. And you know, there was panic and there was like frustration, and you could see guys, you know, wondering what the heck is going on. And meanwhile, they're offering up all this false bravado, like that they're fine and it doesn't matter. But you know, you could just see it and how they were playing. Yeah, it bothered them. They were getting scared, like, we're gonna blow this lead. What if you did all this work to get there and you're gonna blow it within a, I think they blew it in 24 games, 33 days and 24 games they blew a 10-game lead. So and like, I mean, and give the Astros credit, they played, I think they went over a 26 game span, they went 19 and or they went 20-6.
Yeah, they got really hot. Like,
yeah, like that's 7-something baseball. Like, that just doesn't happen all the time. You know, it's self-corrected a little bit. But now you're in this position that they were in probably last year at this time, too, where, like, everybody's within a game or two of each other, and then they're just going to duke it out. I mean, I fully expect at some point the Rangers will take the lead in the division. I expect the Mariners will lead again in the division, and Houston will. Like, they're going to go back and forth, because if you recall last year, you know, the Rangers got out to a 9.5 game lead early, and they kind of kept it about 5 or 6. And then, you know, their bullpen got exposed for what they were, and then it wilted, and the Mariners took the lead for a while, then the Astros, and they all went down to the last day or the second to the last day of the season. I expect that to happen again, because I don't think that – I think all three teams are flawed. I don't think any one is significantly better than the other. Like, the Astros have a great offense. They don't really pitch, but they have three really good relievers. The Rangers have some offense when they're healthy. They have terrible bullpen and a couple of pitchers that are coming back. And then the Mariners have that starting staff, an improved bullpen, and no offense. So, like, it's just kind of who can withstand and kind of tread water until they get hot enough to take control.
Well, the second piece that came into focus today was not just the Arozarena deal, but now they also this afternoon acquired Yimi Garcia, a right-handed pitcher. You speaking about how great the staff is already. How does he fit into it? Is he somewhat? Where is he going? What is his role going to be? Or is he a piece that they could flip for more hitting? Like, are they done, or is this? Do you expect them to commit to him?
No, Garcia is like a middle. He's like a leverage relief type that they need for the seventh or eighth inning. I mean, they just have really missed Matt Brash, who had season-ending Tommy John, and never pitched for them. And then Gregory Santos, another leverage reliever that they went out and got. He's been hurt most of the year, and he tweaked his knee the other day. It sounds like he'll be okay. But, like, they just need something in the back end of their bullpen to help out Andrés Muñoz, who's pretty much been their only consistent reliever all year. That's been the one thing, too. Like, in years past, they've found guys, or they've went out and got guys, and made guys, created guys like Paul Sewald, you know, picked him up off the scrap heap and turned him into a really good reliever. They haven't been able to do that this year with some of their pickups, you know, and putting Trent Thornton in these leverage situations just wasn't working. And Ryan Stanek's been inconsistent of late. So they went out and got Yimi Garcia, because they think he can get some swing and miss. He's versatile enough to pitch an inning plus, and he can close if you need him to. Obviously they don't, but like, they needed another leverage arm. I wouldn't be surprised if they had another reliever. Like, if you believe you're close and you don't score a lot of runs anyways, maybe the best thing to do is continue to add bullpen pieces, so when you play those close games, you have guys that can get strikeouts. But, I mean, I think, you know, they're not going to use Garcia to get another piece, but they're going to try and trade because they still have all their top prospects available to trade if they wanted to. So they can go after the aircraft carrier. They made an offer. I know they've made real efforts to try and see what they have to give up to get Vlad Guerrero, and they have some pieces. It's whether Toronto wants to do it or not. I don't know about Luis Robert per se. You know, I'm sure that I know they've inquired about him. Those are the two main guys, but I think they'll add peripheral pieces if they don't. Like if those guys aren't available, you know, they may add another platoon bat that can play third base or first base. You know, they do have a hole at first base since they've gotten rid of Ty France and they're playing a rookie there. So there are options, and they need to add another bat, you know, maybe two. If they're peripheral bats, maybe two. But there are some pieces out there that maybe not as sexy as Vlad Guerrero, but that could help them, because right now they need anything that, you know, gets them to be able to get the runs per game up to, you know, if they can get to 4.5 runs per game, that covers up a lot of problems. They're at 3.5 runs per game. That's just not a good place to be.
Where does Rosarena fit into the lineup?
Yeah, about third or fourth, I guess, right now. You can kind of sandwich him in between, you know, Jorge Polanco and Cal Raleigh is my guess. They're both switch hitters, so you don't run in that split situation or anything like that. They'll play him in left field. You know, they know he's not a great defensive outfielder, but they just need somebody to bring some presence. So, you know, I would say three or four is probably where he'll bat.
Talking to Ryan Divish on the Mariners beat. Just one more for you, Ryan, before we get you out of here. I know you also referenced on your X timeline the contract for Randy Rosarena. Obviously, they need his help this year, but what does he have left on his contract moving forward, and what is that going to ultimately cost the Mariners?
So he's got two more years of arbitration eligibility after this year, and he made $8 million this year. So he'll likely make, even with his down year and his overall down numbers, he still plays a lot, you know, and the quantity matters. So my guess is he'll at least get a $4 million bump onto that. So that's $12 million for next year. And even if it goes up to $16 million for the year after that, that's a sizable amount of money. But again, you're probably Mitch Garver was 2 years, $24 million on the free agent market this year. So it could be a bargain if Randy hits, you know. And that's one thing like about Rosarena is he hits good pitching, and he performs in the playoffs. So, like, you know, I think they feel like bringing this guy with, he's, you know, he doesn't lack for confidence. Anybody who's watched him, and maybe he brings some presence. And I think, you know what, you got to invest. You got to invest money to, you know, get to where you want, and make the big money of being in the World Series. So I think, you know, they understand that there's some dollars are at risk. And I guess if it totally tanks or whatever, then maybe they try and move him in the offseason to a team.
Fair enough. Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. He's on the Mariners beat. You can check him out on X at Ryan Divish. Appreciate you hopping on with us and all the insights.
No problem. Take it easy, guys.
Hey, and I know people like dragging the fact that old Randy there is hitting .211, you know, but again, he would be second in the team in RBI, second in the team in home runs behind Cal Raleigh.
He brings the pop that you need, and he's capable of hitting better than that.
Yes, he's having a little bit off here. He runs the bases a little bit, and he's not a great defender, but he's got a big arm. So, look, it's no Vlad Guerrero. God, that would be pie in the sky, but...
And it sounds like they may still be trying to make that happen. He mentioned they still have some of their best chips to be able to trade with, so...
Look, if you're a Mariner fan and you're upset with this one, then I don't know what to tell you.
The bottom line is you're taking a swing, which is what we want.
And you didn't give up a lot to go get it.
No.
So...
Really nicely done by Jerry DePoto, it seems, at least for now. We'll find out. The proof will be in the pudding when playoff time comes around. But I think as a fan base that's been frustrated by the lack of moves, this is as much as you can hope for. Two moves in 24 hours and maybe more coming before we get to Tuesday. Coming up next, going to shift gears to the NFL. Tua got paid and a couple Huskies with some interesting stories at their respective training camps. It's coming up next on Primetime on 1080 The Fan. Get up!
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime. Just finished up with Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times on the Mariners beat. We got to move over to a little bit of NFL now because another quarterback got paid today, Sue.
Yep.
And
is it such a thing as getting a deal when you have to give someone $53 million?
So that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, because, yes, Tua Tagovailoa just got a ton of money. He just made a bag. But compared to what some of his peers and colleagues are getting, doesn't seem that crazy. So where do we sit on this thing?
I mean, I you sit on it where you knew he was going to get paid. I mean, I think he's what, the fourth? Is it the fourth highest? Now he's
the third.
Is it the third? So it's Burrow's one.
I think Burrow and Lawrence are tied at 1-2 at 55, and then he's at 53.1 average annual salary.
So he's a, yeah, it's just a, it's a scooch up, and then Herbert, I think, comes in there. So it's all new money. If you thought that Tua was going to sign for a sweetheart of a deal, you're fooling yourself.
No.
And this is the problem that we have with quarterbacks. It's not about being the best. It's about being next. And, you know, when Tua was healthy, Tua put up MVP numbers last year. So he said he wasn't going to play 11 on 11. He was only doing 7 on 7 stuff in camp. And, you know, none of this should shock you. Is Tua worth $53 million? No, he's not. Very few people that are worth $53 million.
But that's what a starting quarterback on a good team makes now.
Yes. And this is my biggest problem that I have right now with the NFL, is they have to figure this out. Because as the salary cap keeps climbing and the quarterback number keeps climbing, there's just very few guys that can they can take this sort of the cap and then have you put a really good team around them. And, you know, Miami wasn't winning anything big when Tua was making rookie money. And it's going to become that much harder when he's making this. And so this is the juxtaposition of the NFL now, where you pay your quarterback an S ton of money and the rest of the roster gets worse. And when you're not good enough to win on a rookie deal, when you're able to put a great team around you, it's just harder and harder when you do get paid. But I don't fault any quarterback for wanting $53 million, because if someone wanted to give me $53 million and everyone else was getting it, well, why would I take less?
And I know you're saying that he's not giving them a deal, but the total value of the contract is $212.4 million. The guaranteed money is $167 million.
Yeah.
That's eighth among NFL quarterbacks. So he's not getting the most or even close to the most guaranteed money. On annual value, yeah, he's right up there with the very best, but he's not getting the most guaranteed money. And he's a guy where we've seen something can happen to him, maybe more easily than others. So I think that, I don't know that he's conceding something with that. But the other thing that stood out to me is that I read that Miami is now the only team in the NFL with three offensive skill players making at least $70 million in guaranteed money. They've got Tyreek Hill, who's making $72 million, Jalen Waddle is making $71 million, and now, of course, you've got Tua, who's making $53 million. That's the third highest for any skill set in the NFL players.
They're spending a bunch of money. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, when you're paying Waddle, you're paying Hill, and you're paying Tua, you can't pay everybody. And so you're going to be cheap at other positions. So the question becomes, is Miami really a complete team? Or are they just going to go out there and say, hey, we're going to outscore everybody? And I'll tell you what, if you're paying those three guys, you better have cheap alignment and cheap defenders that are young and that can ball out. Otherwise, you know, get ready for shootouts and then going on the road in the playoffs and having happen what happened last year in Kansas City.
Well, and I think what they're basing this off of is, like, McDaniel has shown that he can take running backs off the scrap heap and turn them into big-time performers. I mean, Mostert last year led the NFL in rushing touchdowns, right? That's a guy that they plucked out of obscurity in San Francisco, and then once they got Christian McCaffrey, they moved on from him, and McDaniels was able to grab him and really turn him into something, right? But that being said, this is why Miami isn't really a Super Bowl contender. It's because you're spending most of your money on three players in positions where, yeah, quarterback, obviously most important position in the NFL, but you're paying a lot of money to Waddle and Tyreek Hill, and I'm not going to come out here and say that Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are by far and away the number one and number two wide receiver in the NFL. Like, they're just not at that position. This is why we always talk about them being good in September and October, but then when it gets cold, when the weather turns, if they're not in Miami, they struggle. They don't have the defense to stop people, and that offensive line, if you can get them off track, if they're not, you know, getting 3-4 yards on first and second down and having third and manageables, they fall into issues and they struggle. It's why this team isn't a real Super Bowl contender.
I want to shift gears to a couple Washington Huskies in the NFL, some headlines you don't expect to see every day. One involved an extortion attempt. The other weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Which one do you want to go with first?
Take the weapons of mass destruction. Let's go.
So this comes to us from New England Patriots camp, where rookie wide receiver Jalen Polk.
It's one of the great quotes you'll hear.
Move over Sean McDermott. Yeah. He did the whole the guys who planned 9/11 had great teamwork thing many years ago. This is what Jalen Polk said today at Patriots camp. He said, "I heard the fans say the Patriots don't have any weapons. Well, this isn't Iraq, buddy. When the other teams come looking for trouble, they will find weapons of mass destruction here."
Big history guy, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, I like that. Quote. I didn't find it offensive. People were like, "Oh, dude, you'll bring that." But
yeah, DeMario Douglas and Kendrick Bourne. What great weapons
for what
they
it's worth,
have in New England.
Eastern seems, Washington's finest.
That's right. It seems like he has been impressing at camp, Jalen specifically, but I love that he invoked the, "This ain't Iraq, you will find WMDs here in Foxborough."
First off, I really do like Jalen Polk. I liked all the Washington receivers. Yeah. I thought they all were criminally underrated last year, and only one of them really got any sort of attention. Those are three really good receivers, but I'll believe it when New England does anything on the offensive side of the ball. Because when's the last time New England had a real offensive player? I mean, it's been a while. Stevenson, they're back. He's a good back.
He's solid, but he's not call him a weapon of mass destruction.
And I'm already skeptical on Drake May. Like, The whispers out of camp, like normally at this time of the year, you just hear everyone bloviate over rookie quarterbacks.
Like, oh, they even, gush over him.
Like even like Zach Wilson, like back in the day, like, "Oh, Zach Wilson's arm." All you hear from Drake May is like, "He's got a lot of work to do." Like, that worries me. So we'll just see. We'll see what you know. Jared, was it the coach now? Mayo.
Oh, Jared Mayo. Gerard
Mayo. We'll see what they have to offer that there in New England, but their young receiver certainly does not lack confidence.
And then finally, up in Seattle, an extortion attempt. This came from Ron Slavin, who is the agent for Byron Murphy, defensive lineman for the Seahawks. And he tweeted one of those notes screenshots that said, "Recently, my client, Byron Murphy, was the victim of an extortion attempt from a text conversation that began and ended online. He had no contact with this person. This is a blackmail scheme that has targeted other young players in the league. We have notified the NFL and turned the matter over to the FBI. Anyone involved in this scheme will be prosecuted." Reading between the lines, I thought he sent a pic of his D to somebody, well, and
it's
then
like, it's
she,
like some sort of OnlyFans thing.
So,
right?
Upon digging a little bit deeper, it seems that the Cliff Notes version of the story is that he's being accused of an OnlyFans model of owing her $15,000 for a night they spent together.
Yeah, a hooker. He's,
yeah.
He's saying that she's claiming that he hired a prostitute off of OnlyFans and then stiffed her on the payment.
So she's tweeted about it as well, wanted to make sure that Byron and his wife and the Seahawks were all getting tagged in that as well.
I love, by the way, that a lady of the evening is like, "That's it. Putting you on blast." That's
he just got engaged, too.
He got engaged a month ago. So that's...
look, can we be honest, you know, for a second?
No.
Like, just 95% of professional athletes... It doesn't matter. Okay. Engaged, girlfriend, wife, kids, stop it. Okay.
You still got to be careful with the people you meet online.
Just a scooch. Like, Damian Lillard is my all time favorite Portland Trailblazer. I love Damian Lillard. He's wonderful in the community. Can we just be honest about what was going on when he was in Portland? He loves his kids and he loves other things too. All right. Let's just be honest. Like, everyone's like, "Oh my goodness, he's getting engaged." Yeah. And he's probably going to get married. Like, if you don't think that his fiance was aware that maybe Byron Murphy had other things going on, I mean, welcome to the world of the NFL. Welcome to the world of the NBA. Welcome to the world of Major League Baseball. And maybe this was a case where he never met this gal and she's just seeking for attention. But my guess is that Byron Murphy had some contact with her.
So
just,
here's my
guess is she didn't randomly just pick.
There's some DMs.
Yes.
Yeah. And the additional thing here, she's also calling him out for... liking certain things instead of others. So I have the tweet here.
It's in vanish mode too. It's damning evidence.
So I don't actually see their text thread, but I have her tweet.
Yeah.
And she says, "Byron Murphy blocked me off him and his fiance page because he owes me $15K. Maybe this will get his attention. He play games and play with the wrong one." Yeah, and then tags the Seahawks and says he likes trans instead of paying. He want to go viral. Tag him, his fiance, and his team, etc. So I believe that this OnlyFans lady of the night is a transgender lady of the night.
Mm-hmm. And
I mean, everyone's got, but
hey, whatever you're gonna do, buddy.
Apparently, she says he want to go viral because he don't want to pay.
I don't know what happened. Couldn't tell you, but I will say this. If you're an athlete or a celebrity or whatever out there and you do owe someone money, just pay the money. Just Reggie Bush. Remember that old Reggie Bush NCAA thing? All that guy wanted was his money. So I don't know what happened, but if indeed you owed her $15,000, you would have been better off paying it. Now, if he is being extorted, then that sucks. That's awful. No one wants their business out there on Front Street, but unfortunately, in today's world of OnlyFans and Instagram models and the rest of that stuff, how many times Dwight Howard got caught up in this, right?
Yeah.
This exact thing, by the way. Who else recently had this celebrity? Oh, who was the Maroon 5 singer?
Oh, Jason Mraz, right?
No, it was Adam,
Adam Levine. Adam Levine,
who wanted to name his kid after the side piece that he had going on.
Yeah, he was talking all about the booty.
Yeah, that's, you know. You know, man, those DMs are forever. That stakes. But according to Byron Murphy, it's an extortion attempt. And so I don't know. I guess give him the benefit of the doubt. But
I'm seeing one of the screenshots here. It's interesting.
Like I said, you know, do we know exactly what happened? No. Do we think something probably happened? Yeah.
Yeah. There was contact, but
go to.
Also, not a bad idea for a money grab if you are trying to screw someone over.
Yeah.
Like, just get those DMs going and be like, oh, by the way, if you don't pay me, I'm going to tell everyone you did this stuff, and it's my word against yours.
No matter what stadium you go to, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, you can find the friends and family section. They're always there. Blazers have one. You can figure out where it's at. And it's hilarious. You go to a Seahawks game, whatever, just go find that friends and, quote, family section, and you can see the professional. You'd see the professionals. You'd see where they're at. And some of them for the road team, some of them for the home team. Some of them have the little babies with them with the little baby jerseys on.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, but it's part of the NFL.
It's almost part of the culture.
Remember when DK Metcalf had his a couple years ago? DK Metcalf, and I may have the details somewhat fuzzy, but DK Metcalf was meeting a gal online. And he was going to have her drive in for a little late night, what mm-hmm. have you. And she was driving like an hour away.
Well, and that's what this is with Byron. He was like, one of the DMs is saying like, hey, I'm going to be at this hotel in this place. Like, I'm going to need you to drop by.
Yeah. So the DK Metcalf messaged her like when she was on the way. I was like, no. Sorry, I got two others. He's like, you're done. I got two that are willing to, you know, hang out together. And then she got all pissed about it. And then as she was driving back home, he texted her again and was like, no. As long as you're cool with it, we got a three thing. Let's all get together. And she texted, of course, she got pissed and like sent out the message and was like, here it is. And, you know, DK Metcalf was like, ah.
He had a girl at Central, too.
Yeah.
You'd see his old car. He'd roll into the apartments and it was like, oh, whose car is that?
Yeah. I wonder. There's only so many people.
You know, it's a rough, you know, I don't want, and hopefully this is, it, by the way, extortion is never a good idea under any circumstances. So we'll just see how this plays out because I'm sure there'll be lawyers, you know, that get involved and maybe there's a settlement, maybe there's not. It's just, I don't know. Guess who's not surprised that a professional athlete with a bunch of money that's maybe
is
new
getting
to the
extorted
league
by someone who does those things
is getting extorted or is seeking certain reliefs on the interwebs from Instagram models or OnlyFans models and all that. So I'm sure this is now part of the rookie symposium when they're like, hey,
gotta be
burner accounts, people, burner accounts, fall guys.
Well, coming up, we need to shift gears over to college football. Dan Lanning, ice cream cones, and Japanese philosophy. But coming up next, culture versus misfortune in college football. Do we have a problem with punishments and player behavior? Georgia Bulldogs edition. That's coming up next on Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
This is a Big Ten Media Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Prime Time. Just finished up with Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times on the Mariners beat. We got to move over to a little bit of NFL now, because another quarterback got paid today, Sook.
Yep.
And
is it such a thing as getting a deal when you have to give someone $53 million?
So that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, because, yes, Tua Tagovailoa just got a ton of money. He just made a bag. But compared to what some of his peers and colleagues are getting, doesn't seem that crazy. So where do we sit on this thing?
I mean, you sit on it where you knew he was going to get paid. I mean, I think he's what, the fourth? Is it the fourth highest? Now he's
the third.
Is it the third? So it's Burrow's one.
I think Burrow and Lawrence are tied at 1-2 at 55, and then he's at 53.1 average annual salary.
So he's it's a scooch up, and then Herbert, I think, comes in there. So it's all new money. If you thought that Tua was going to sign for a sweetheart of a deal, you're fooling yourself.
No.
And this is the problem that we have with quarterbacks. It's not about being the best. It's about being next. And you know, when Tua was healthy, Tua put up MVP numbers last year. So he said he wasn't going to play 11 on 11. He was only doing 7 on 7 stuff in camp. And, you know, none of this should shock you. Is Tua worth $53 million? No, he's not. Very few people that are worth $53
million. But that's what a starting quarterback on a good team makes now.
Yes. And this is my biggest problem that I have right now with the NFL, is they have to figure this out. Because as the salary cap keeps climbing and the quarterback number keeps climbing, there's just very few guys that can they can take this sort of the cap and then have you put a really good team around them. And, you know, Miami wasn't winning anything big when Tua was making rookie money. And it's going to become that much harder when he's making this. And so this is the juxtaposition of the NFL now, where you pay your quarterback an S ton of money and the rest of the roster gets worse. And when you're not good enough to win on a rookie deal, when you're able to put a great team around you, it's just harder and harder when you do get paid. But I don't fault any quarterback for wanting $53 million, because if someone wanted to give me $53 million and everyone else was getting it, well, why would I take less?
And I know you're saying that he's not giving them a deal, but the total value of the contract is $212.4 million. The guaranteed money is $167 million.
Yeah.
That's eighth among NFL quarterbacks. So he's not getting the most or even close to the most guaranteed money. On annual value, yeah, he's right up there with the very best, but he's not getting the most guaranteed money. And he's a guy where we've seen something can happen to him, maybe more easily than others. So I think that, I don't know that he's conceding something with that. But the other thing that stood out to me is that I read that Miami is now the only team in the NFL with three offensive skill players making at least $70 million in guaranteed money. They've got Tyreek Hill, who's making $72 million, Jalen Waddle's making $71 million, and now, of course, you've got Tua, who's making $53 million. That's the third highest for any skill set in the NFL players.
They're spending a bunch of money. And, you know, the truth of the matter is when you're paying Waddle, you're paying Hill, and you're paying Tua, you can't pay everybody. And so you're going to be cheap at other positions. So the question becomes, is Miami really a complete team? Or are they just going to go out there and say, hey, we're going to outscore everybody? And I'll tell you what, if you're paying those three guys, you better have cheap O-linemen and cheap defenders that are young and that can ball out. Otherwise, you know, get ready for shootouts and then going on the road in the playoffs and having happen what happened last year in Kansas City.
Well, and I think what they're basing this off of is like McDaniel has shown that he can take running backs off the scrap heap and turn them into big time performers. I mean, Mostert last year led the NFL in rushing touchdowns, right? That's a guy that they plucked out of obscurity in San Francisco. And then once they got Christian McCaffrey, they moved on from him and McDaniels was able to grab him and really turn him into something, right? But that being said, this is why Miami isn't really a Super Bowl contender. It's because you're spending most of your money on three players in positions where, yeah, quarterback, obviously most important position in the NFL, but you're paying a lot of money to Waddle and Tyreek Hill, and I'm not going to come out here and say that Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are by far and away the number one and number two wide receiver in the NFL. Like, they're just not at that position. This is why we always talk about them being good in September and October, but then when it gets cold, when the weather turns, if they're not in Miami, they struggle. They don't have the defense to stop people, and that offensive line, if you can get them off track, if they're not, you know, getting 3-4 yards on first and second down and having third and manageables, they fall into issues and they struggle. It's why this team isn't a real Super Bowl contender.
I want to shift gears to a couple Washington Huskies in the NFL, some headlines you don't expect to see every day. One involved an extortion attempt. The other, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Which one do you want to go with first?
Take the weapons of mass destruction. Let's go.
So this comes to us from New England Patriots camp, where rookie wide receiver Jalen Polk.
It's one of the great quotes you'll hear.
Move over Sean McDermott. Yeah. He did the whole the guys who planned 9/11 had great teamwork thing many years ago. This is what Jalen Polk said today at Patriots camp. He said, "I heard the fans say the Patriots don't have any weapons. Well, this isn't Iraq, buddy. When the other teams come looking for trouble, they will find weapons of mass destruction here."
Big history guy, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, I like that. Quote. I didn't find it offensive. People are like, "Oh, dude, don't bring that." But
yeah, DeMario Douglas and Kendrick Bourne. What great weapons
for what
they
it's worth,
have in New England.
Washington's finest.
That's right. It seems like he has been impressing at camp, Jalen specifically, but I love that he invoked the, "This ain't Iraq, you will find WMDs here in Foxborough."
First off, I really do like Jalen Polk. I liked all the Washington receivers. Yeah. I thought they all were criminally underrated last year, and only one of them really got any sort of attention. Those are three really good receivers, but I'll believe it when New England does anything on the offensive side of the ball. Because when's the last time New England had a real offensive player? I mean, it's been a while. Stevenson, they're back. He's a good back.
He's solid, but he's not a. You wouldn't call him a weapon of mass destruction.
And I'm already skeptical on Drake May. Like. The whispers out of camp, like normally at this time of the year, you just hear everyone bloviate over rookie quarterbacks.
Oh, they gush over him.
Like even like Zach Wilson, like back in the day, like, "Oh, Zach Wilson's arm." All you hear from Drake May is like, "He's got a lot of work to do." Like, that worries me. So we'll just see. We'll see what you know. Jared, was it their coach now? Mayo.
Oh, Jared Mayo. Gerard
Mayo. We'll see what they have to offer that there in New England, but their young receiver certainly does not lack confidence.
And then finally, up in Seattle, an extortion attempt. This came from Ron Slavin, who is the agent for Byron Murphy, defensive lineman for the Seahawks. And he tweeted one of those notes screenshots that said, "Recently, my client, Byron Murphy, was the victim of an extortion attempt from a text conversation that began and ended online. He had no contact with this person. This is a blackmail scheme that has targeted other young players in the league. We have notified the NFL and turned the matter over to the FBI. Anyone involved in this scheme will be prosecuted." Reading between the lines, I thought he sent a pic of his D to somebody, well, and then
it's
she,
like some sort of OnlyFans thing.
So,
right?
Upon digging a little bit deeper, it seems that the Cliff Notes version of the story is that he's being accused of an OnlyFans model of owing her $15,000 for a night they spent together.
Yeah, hooker. He's,
yeah.
He's saying that she's claiming that he hired a prostitute off of OnlyFans and then stiffed her on the payment.
So she's tweeted about it as well, wanted to make sure that Byron and his wife and the Seahawks were all getting tagged in that
love,
as well.
I love, by the way, that a lady of the evening is like, that's it, putting you on blast. That's
he just got engaged, too.
He got engaged a month ago, so that's...
look, can we be honest, you know, for a second?
No.
Like, just 95% of professional athletes... It doesn't matter, okay? Engaged, girlfriend, wife, kids, stop it, okay?
You still got to be careful with the people you meet online.
Just a scooch. Like, Damian Lillard is my all-time favorite Portland Trailblazer. I love Damian Lillard. He's wonderful in the community. Can we just be honest about what was going on when he was in Portland? He loves his kids, and he loves other things, too. All right? Let's just be honest. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, he's getting engaged. Yeah, and he's probably going to get married. Like, that's if you don't think that his fiance was aware that maybe Byron Murphy had other things going on. I mean, welcome to the world of the NFL. Welcome to the world of the NBA. Welcome to the world of Major League Baseball. And maybe this was a case where he never met this gal and she's just seeking for attention. But my guess is that Byron Murphy had some contact with her.
So
just,
here's
my guess is she didn't randomly just pick.
There's some DMs.
Yes.
Yeah. And the additional thing here, she's also calling him out for liking certain things instead of others. So I have the tweet here.
It's in vanish mode too. It's damning evidence.
So I don't actually see their text thread, but I have her tweet.
Yeah.
And she says, Byron Murphy blocked me off him and his fiance page because he owes me $15K. Maybe this will get his attention. He play games and play with the wrong one. Yeah, and then tags the Seahawks and says he likes trans instead of paying. He want to go viral. Tag him, his fiance, and his team, etc. So I believe that this OnlyFans lady of the night is a transgender lady of the night.
Whatever you're into, buddy.
Apparently, she says he want to go viral because he don't want to pay.
I don't know what happened. Couldn't tell you, but I will say this. If you're an athlete or a celebrity or whatever out there and you do owe someone money, just pay the money. Just Reggie Bush. Remember that old Reggie Bush NCAA thing? All that guy wanted was his money. So I don't know what happened, but if indeed you owed her $15,000, you would have been better off paying it. Now, if he is being extorted, then that sucks. That's awful. No one wants their business out there on Front Street, but... Unfortunately, in today's world of OnlyFans and Instagram models and the rest of that stuff, how many times Dwight Howard got caught up in this, right?
Yeah.
This exact thing, by the way. Who else recently had this celebrity? Oh, who was the Maroon 5 singer?
Oh, Jason Mraz, right? Adam Levine.
Adam Levine, who wanted to name his kid after the side piece that he had going on.
He was talking all about the booty.
Yeah, that's, you know... You know, man, those DMs are forever. That stinks. But according to Byron Murphy, it's an extortion attempt. And so I don't know. I guess give him the benefit of the doubt. But
I'm seeing one of the screenshots here. It's interesting.
Like I said, you know, do we know exactly what happened? No. Do we think something probably happened? Yeah.
Yeah. There was contact. But
go to.
Also, not a bad idea for a money grab if you are trying to screw someone over.
Yeah.
Like, just get those DMs going and be like, oh, by the way, if you don't pay me, I'm going to tell everyone you did this stuff and just my word against yours.
No matter what stadium you go to, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, you can find the friends and family section. They're always there. You know, Blazers have one. You can figure out where it's at.
And it's hilarious. You go to a Seahawks game, whatever. Just go find that friends and, quote, family section, and you can see the professionals. You'd see the professionals. You'd see where they're at. And some of them for the road team, some of them for the home team. Some of them have the little babies with them with the little baby jerseys on. I hate to say it, but it's part of the NFL.
It's almost part of the culture.
Remember when DK Metcalf has had his a couple years ago? DK Metcalf, and I may have the details somewhat fuzzy, but DK Metcalf was meeting a gal online, and he was going to have her drive in for a little late night, what have you. And she was driving like an hour away.
Well, and that's what this is with Byron. He was like, one of the DMs is saying like, hey, I'm going to be at this hotel in this place. Like, I'm going to need you to drop by.
Yeah. So the DK Metcalf messaged her like when she was on the way. I was like, no, sorry. I got two others. He's like, you're done. I got two that are willing to, you know, hang out together. And then she got all pissed about it. And then as she was driving back home, he texted her again and was like, no. As long as you're cool with it, we got a three thing. Let's all get together. And she texted, of course, she got pissed and like sent out the message and was like, here it is. And, you know, DK Metcalf was like, ah.
He had a girl at Central too.
Yeah.
You'd see his old car. He'd roll into the apartments, and it was like, "Oh, whose car is that?"
Yeah. I wonder. There's only so many people.
You know, it's a rough. You know, I don't want. And hopefully, this is. It, by the way, extortion is never a good idea under any circumstances. So we'll just see how this plays out, because I'm sure there'll be lawyers. You know, that get involved, and maybe there's a settlement, maybe there's not. It's just, I don't know. Guess who's not surprised that a professional athlete with a bunch of money that's maybe
is
new
getting
to the
extorted by someone who does those things
is getting extorted or is seeking certain reliefs on the interwebs from Instagram models or OnlyFans models and all that. So I'm sure this is now part of the rookie symposium when they're like, hey,
gotta be
burner accounts, people, burner accounts, fall guys.
Well, coming up, we need to shift gears over to college football. Dan Lanning, ice cream cones, and Japanese philosophy. But coming up next, culture versus misfortune in college football. Do we have a problem with punishments and player behavior? Georgia Bulldogs edition. That's coming up next on Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.